Welcome to the Clubhouse. It's the second official podcast here for the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I'm Shane Bacon. A very, very fun week at the WGC. Feel like we should all probably be speaking in Australian accents from this point forward with the way Jason Day's played the last 2 weeks and, of course, the way Adam Scott's played this year. Really just impressive from the start. I think a lot of people were knocking Jason Day. Not knocking him, but saying he didn't have his A game necessarily a week ago at Bay Hill and still won. Of course, obviously, that was not the case this week. I thought he played incredibly well. And, of course, the big matchup with Rory went Jason Day's way. And when you look at that match, you can look at the way Day played. I mean, even Rory mentioning after, really, Jason Day only missed one shot and it was on the second. But it was the putt on 18. I mean, he didn't hit a very good tee shot on 18. Second shot, he kind of missed where you don't want to miss it. Missed it left. Pitched it to really the only position you could give yourself a chance at four. And buried that putt dead center. You know, that's the difference now, in my opinion, is Jason Day these days has the ability to pull off shots and make clutch putts when he has to. And I feel like, you know, that's why he's the favorite at Augusta. I mean, there's no reason why you'd put anybody else in front of him. I've been doing Masters Power Rankings on Fox Sports starting 2 weeks ago. I'll have one out this Thursday. And Bubba's been atop it. And I said last week, I said, you come at the king, you best not miss. Bubba's the guy I had atop the rankings by far. And Day took it. Day went out there and took it in an event that is easy to not advance in. I mean, that's the weird thing about match play. At the Masters, at the U.S. Open, PGA Championship, British Open, if your game's intact, there's really only one factor that can ruin it, and that's a bad weather draw. You get a bad draw of weather, and maybe you shoot a big number, and you can't really make up ground from that. In match play, run into a hot golfer, or you have a few holes where you're not totally sharp, and you're out. And Jason Day was able to just survive and play against these big names and beat them. I mean, you draw the names he drew in the semis, in the finals, and you come out victorious. And even for somebody like Jason Day, that's huge for your confidence. I mean, that is enormous, enormous confidence builder. Not like he needs it, for goodness sakes. But it was a really impressive week for Jason Day. Also, just wanted to say, I mentioned something earlier in the week at the match play about the format and how I thought it was so exciting, and I liked the small tweak of the half points. People were jumping on it. They did not like it. Oh, we think it's stupid. We can't believe people have to maybe potentially play a playoff against somebody they already beat in a previous match. It's drama, man. I mean, that's what we want. We want this stuff to be exciting. And I thought the format played out perfectly. I thought Friday was so much fun. We were doing PGA Tour Live. I had about 8 pages of scenarios. And really watching it and seeing how it played out was awesome. I just thought it was a lot of fun. We got to see some playoffs. We saw Kevin Na and Rory go at it. They have to go to extra holes. Rory comes out victorious. I just thought it was cool. I think the pool play thing's a good idea. It keeps people around. You know, for the most part, it really brought out the best in who was in the groups. I mean, Jordan Spieth moves on. He was number one seed. You get Jason Day. You get Rory moving on. Of course, Ricky and Bubba didn't. But honestly, we got the names you wanted to get out of those things. And I thought that even the small little tweak about the matches just going 18 was great. Really, the only thing they could change now, in my opinion, is allowing those playoffs to go right away. I think having to wait for your playoff is kind of a bummer. I just think if you're in a heated match, you go 18. I think forcing people to hold off on starting their match makes a lot more sense than making people wait, you know, an hour and a half before going out. Just for some reason, the momentum and the feel, if you were in one of those playoffs, I just feel like would be bothersome. So that's really the only tweak. I think they just about nailed it. And of course, there's going to be people that don't love it. That's fine. I thought Friday was the best Friday in golf that we'll have all year because of all the drama with the way things were playing out, with the scenarios of this guy moving on or this guy moving on, and it all come down to a putt or two. I was a big fan. And can we just talk about Lydia Ko for a second? This stuff is crazy. Shoots 19 under, birdies her last 3 holes to win, 11th win at 18 years old, took Tiger to 23 before he won his 11th PGA Tour start. And listen, compare LPGA to PGA Tour, don't do it, hate it, love it, whatever. I'm just saying, Lydia Ko's career has been the most impressive we've ever seen from somebody starting off in golf, man or woman. And to snag another win, it's just ridiculous. She's the best teenager to ever play golf. And I couldn't be more impressed with the way she does it. But this leads to something. Every week we're going to have a segment called Did You See That? And we ask you guys at home to send in videos, Vines, Instagrams, anything of something weird that maybe not everybody saw. And we have actually up two this week. The first, if you haven't seen this, you need to jump online. And we'll post this on foxsports.com/golf when we post the podcast episode. But Lydia Ko double hit a putt. I've never heard of that in my entire life. She double hit a putt on the 10th hole on Sunday at the Kia Classic. Literally hit it. It was sitting down. It looked like it was sitting down in a divot. The ball pops up about, I don't know, a foot in the air, and it hit the shaft of her putter. Obviously, had to take a penalty and making a bogey. Still went on to win, but it was strange. I'm not sure I've ever seen that, you know, on TV or playing. So Lydia Ko, well done. And also, I posted this Vine. We'll also have this on the website, so check that out. The little kid behind the green when Jason Day made the par putt. Man, I've never seen a kid that happy to see anything happen. He was clapping. He was excited. He was fired up. Had his Longhorn hat on. So kudos to that little man. He is a big golf fan, and you can see it. It was pretty awesome. The three things that I love this week, aside from the winner, Patton Kizzire. This kid, I mean, I guess kid is maybe not even what you call him anymore. He looks young. He's 30 years old. Round one, birdied 18 to have his match with Bubba. Clutch. Round two, four down, six holes to play against J.B. Holmes. Plays in three under, has that match to give himself a chance of moving on. And then round three, playing Emiliano Grillo, birdies his last three holes to win that match and to advance. I mean, Bubba Watson's in there. J.B. Holmes is in there. And he's the one that advances. It was really, really impressive stuff. Listen, confidence can come from anything in golf. I mean, it's not just a win. And I think what Kizzire did, if he plays well the next two or three months, look at this. Jason Gore famously did this with his play at the U.S. Open to go on and get a Battlefield exemption to the PGA Tour. I'm just saying, if Kizzire's a winner in 3 weeks or 4 weeks, I think you could look back to this as really the moment he took off, because I thought it was really impressive with what he did down the stretch. Obviously, Cabrera Bayo played awesome golf this week, earns a spot into the Masters, wasn't in. Really, the last gasp of getting in besides a win in Houston this week. So kudos to him. I thought he played great. Obviously, played well in the consolation match. Rory McIlroy, by the way, a little foreshadowing there, the consolation match, was quoted earlier in the week as saying, man, I'm glad I haven't played one of those yet. Kyle Porter at CBS pulled the quote, threw it up on Twitter last night during the match. So that was funny. And finally, you know, I mean, obviously you've got to give some love to Tony Finau. First PGA Tour win. You know, you go to these other events, you know, the ones that go alongside the WGCs and the majors, and it feels web.com Tory a little bit, but the wins matter so much more. And Finau, the guy that earlier this year in my preview piece I wrote, he was the guy I thought if anybody random would break out and potentially play well or win a major, I had Finau as my guy. Big of him to get that win. Birdied all the playoff holes. He played the 18th three times, birdied it all three times. So not just a big win, but a clutch win for Finau. So really impressive. Really a great week in golf. Let's be serious here. I mean, Jason Day wins. We got Jason versus Rory. You know, I mean, you're not really going up much against much, especially early in those mornings, except for college basketball. And so a lot of people tuning in, and it was a lot of fun. And with that, let's get to some mailbag questions. Let's do it. Why not? Sean Deal wrote in, do people hate on Day for pace of play because that's his only flaw? And yes, that's my answer. He gets hated on because that seems to be his only flaw. Really nice guy. Everybody in the media likes him. All the players like him. Hits it a mile, you know, is polite. You know, he has that edge in match play where he doesn't give putts a lot. And, you know, some people have knocked him for that, famously in a big battle with Paul Casey where he wouldn't give I think it was about a foot and a half putt. But you know what? That's the right, man. Match play is all about that. You're not only are you playing the guy, but you're playing the game too, you know? If you make a guy put a foot and a half putt, it's not just because you want to see him make it. It's because you want to get him thinking. You know, now he's thinking about it. Now he's thinking about what he has to do in that situation. And anything you can pull out of the guys you're playing with's head and make him start thinking about something else besides his golf game, that's a win for you. And I think, you know, we saw Rory McIlroy get extremely frustrated early in his match against Kevin Na. that throws him off his game. I mean, you're slamming drivers and slamming irons, and that's part of it as well. So, you know, this is a game within a game in match play. And Day taking his time, slowing down, that's also a little bit of it as well. So, I mean, he's not getting penalized. Who cares? If you're not getting penalized for this, why does it matter if you play a little slower? I don't understand it. I mean, do I want him to speed up? Absolutely. I think it takes forever to watch tour events. But in the same regard, this guy's trying to win. And every win's huge for him, not only career-wise, but a chance to make the Hall of Fame, maybe to win a FedEx Cup. These are big things. So I don't hate on him. I think the reason they do is exactly what Sean said. It's because we don't really have any reason to hate on him as more on anything else. The next question, and of course, you guys can send these questions and use the hashtag ClubhouseSB. That's ClubhouseSB, or you can send it right at me on Twitter at Shane Bacon, or out the Clubhouse Pod. That's a Twitter account as well. A lot of ways to get in touch with us. Fun question here. Mike Delaney wrote, what foursome of current tour pros would you choose to play a one-club challenge? And, I mean, you got to go Bubba, of course, to start. I mean, I think he would be probably the number one pick of anybody here. He's crazy with his golf shots. It would be fun to see what club he'd pick. I think a popular choice would be a 6 or a 7 iron. Also, maybe a fairway wood. The only problem is if you hit it in fairway bunker, I guess you just have to almost chip putt it out of there. But I think I would probably go 7 iron, not just because I'm a 10 cup fan, just because I think it's logical. But I'd go Bubba number one. And then right after Bubba, I think a close second in the sense of enjoyment and watching this would be Phil Mickelson. Phil would be a lot of fun to see in this as well. And Phil going up against Bubba, the nice thing about this is they could have a little side bet, lefties versus righties, because number three, I'd go Rory. You got to have him in there. Sorry. I mean, I think he's kind of the face of global golf right now, and I think he'd be fun to have in this event. And lastly, kind of a flyer, I'm going to go Patrick Reed. I just think he'd get up for it. I think he'd be really into it. He's competitive. I think he might win this thing. He's kind of one of those guys that if he wins a couple of majors, I think he's going to win. You know, I think he'll win majors and be really excited about what comes with it after. You know, he'll be excited about backing those things up. That's kind of how Pat Reed is. So Bubba, Phil, Rory, Patrick Reed, let me know who you would go with. What foursome of current tour pros who you'd pick to play a one-club challenge. Let us know on Twitter, hashtag ClubhouseSB. Fun question, Mike. Thanks for sending that in. Big fan of that question. Next, Amol Yajnik. Am I saying that correctly? That it might have just completely hacked that. My bad, buddy. The Masters bet. Masters a week away. Masters week is a week away from Monday. We are right in it, guys. Right in the trenches. Masters bet. Anyone from Australia versus the field. Who are you taking? So the Australian field as of right now, Adam Scott, Jason Day, Cameron Smith, Mark Leishman, Stephen Bowditch. Of course, this question is on the piggyback in the fact that Adam Scott and Jason Day are playing the best golf in the world right now. I get that. But, you know, just a note on a couple of these guys. Cameron Smith, you know, finished really well at the U.S. Open last year, so he's played well in majors before. Mark Leishman in that British Open playoff last year, the forgotten one, if you will, with Zach Johnson and Louis. But he finished tied for fourth in the 2013 Masters. So he's played well at Augusta before. Bowditch, the only one he's played in, tied for 26th in the 2014 Masters. So nearly a top 25 himself. I'm going Aussies, man. I'm doing it. Aussie. I'm going Adam Scott and Jason Day. I think those are going to be the two guys atop my Masters power rankings. I think they are the favorites, in my opinion. One of them's already won a Masters. One of them nearly's won one. Coming in, last major winner. Won two events in a row. The heavy favorite, in my opinion, to win at Augusta. I think he thinks that as well. That's interesting. Let us know. Clubhouse SB. Would you go Australians or everybody else? You get Spieth. You get Rory. You get Bubba. You get Louis. There's big names on that side as well. Next question. This is a fun one. David Khatib said, fill in the blank. You know you watch too much golf. When? So I jumped on Twitter, asked you guys to let me know your answer. The Heights Fade said, you say out loud, DJ wore that same Jason Day shirt on Friday. I totally agree. Adam Sarsen, the great GIF maker, said, flipped it over to Golf Channel and saw the 1994 players, and I immediately recognized Jeff Maggard's address. I think I have a problem. He retweeted that for his answer. He said he sent that out a couple years ago. That's pretty great. The man that sent the question in, David, said, when most of your PTO are used during the four majors in Ryder Cup, totally agree. Some greens and regulations say your tee time replaces Easter Mass. Going to make some family members upset about that, but I get it. Gus Gabriel said they show a blimp shot of a swing and you know it's Jeff Ogilvy and they haven't ID'd him yet. That's one of my favorite games to play when guys are swinging and you pick up on it quickly, especially if you can't see their face or their hat or their sponsors. Somebody said, you don't think twice about the Australia tour airing in the middle of the night trying to prep for fantasy golf. Been there before, man. I've been there before. Watching late night golf or DVRing it is one of my favorite. And Coach G finally said, when you're driving down the road and you see a flag in a field and imagine how you would play the random field. So here's my answer. And this is this weird thing I've done for years. And it piggybacks on what Coach G said. So when I'm driving and see a really skinny road, or if I see like power lines that are really close together with the poles up, I'm always thinking of how I would play a golf shot down that, which is obviously really wacky. But you know, if I'm driving in West Texas, I'm like, you know, would I hit a little punch 4-iron down the road to keep it on there? Would I hit a little draw? Would I putt it? How would I do it? And if I see any tight space in a backyard or a friend's house, I'm always thinking about how I would punch the shot through the hole. It's weird, I know, but that's the answer. I mean, that's why I know I've got a problem. It's ridiculous. So, fun questions. Make sure you guys keep getting those in. And finally, we'll go here with Mike McGowan. He said, what does the Final Four match play mean for American Ryder Cup confidence? Different lens following WGC match play? I'm going to go another way here, Mike. No Americans in the Final Four, 11 in the Final 16. So 11 Americans won their group or their pod. I thought that was important. Shows a little bit of how well you're playing against some other competitors. So I think all in all, if you give the Americans a grade at this thing, maybe a B+. I thought they played well to get into that group, to really get a lot of red, white, and blue in those Final 16. And really, if you think about some of the names that were there, you know, I mean, you had some big names in that group. I mean, you have Brooks Koepka, you've got Chris Kirk, you've got DJ. I mean, these are people that you think potentially could be on the Ryder Cup or should be on the Ryder Cup, mind you. I mean, Zach Johnson was there as well, Pat Reed, you know, I mean, and Jordan Spieth, of course, Matt Kuchar. I mean, these are names I think you expect to be on the Ryder Cup later this year. So it's good to see him play well enough to get through. So I'm going to go a positive. I don't think it was a negative they didn't make the finals. You know, when you get in the knockout rounds, you run into somebody red hot and you don't make it. That's just how it goes. So I'm not stressing out about it. I thought they played well, and I think it was a good week all in all for Americans, really, if you think about it, out of Austin. And also, kudos to Austin, Texas, and Austin Country Club. That place is awesome. Had a really good time there. Really enjoyed the golf course, and think the players did as well. I think Rory summed it up best. He's really glad it's a match play golf course and not necessarily a stroke play one. So kudos to Austin. Really fun week. And with that, it's a family win, because now time for the winning tweet of the week. And Ellie Day, Jason Day's wife. If you remember when Rory was playing Jason Day, Jason gave Rory a fairly lengthy par putt on the 17th. He was one up. Rory had a really good look at birdie on 17. It just slid by, and Day tells him to pick it up. And as we mentioned earlier, Jason Day, a fan of making people putt important putts, especially short ones. Ellie wrote, I'm surprised he gave that. I'm just so thankful this is not my job. And let me tell you, couldn't agree more. So I watch this stuff and I get nervous. My hands sweat. These little short putts these guys have to make in match play to move on. I mean, you know, it's coming down to really keeping your week going. And that's what's so different, obviously, about match play, but so much fun about it is, you know, players don't really face four-footers that are must-makes unless it's to win an event. You know, I mean, you might have a putt to make a cut, but must-makes that are pressure-packed, you know, you might have one a month as a tour player. You know, you might have one to make the cut or one to apply the pressure. But for the most part, your putts just are part of the round. That's what I think was cool this week is every single putt down the stretch was, do I continue on? Do I keep this match alive? And, God, I just wish there was a little bit more match play. One more event. That's all I want. Maybe make it a FedEx Cup event. Maybe make it the finals. I just think there's an opportunity here and a chance for it. I think match play is so much fun, and watching these guys go back and forth and really seeing different players and the way they approach it is just a lot of fun. So that was the best tweet, the winning tweet, Ellie Day. A lot of great follow, too. It's Ellie Lane Day, and she's always fun, especially when Jason's in contention, which seems to be every week at this point. So that's that. A good week, an exciting week. Houston will be a lot of fun. Excited about Houston. And then, of course, It's Magnolia time, baby. We're almost there.
And stay tuned, guys, because coming up next, Chris Solomon of No Laying Up, the No Laying Up account. You follow it on Twitter and Instagram and all those good things. Chris is going to join me. I'm going to fire some hot takes his way, and I'm going to see exactly where he stands on a lot of the big names. Jason Day's best versus Rory's best. If Rory's playing well enough to win the Masters, where's Jordan Spieth at? And much, much more. Of course, I'm going to ask him something about Bubba Watson, too. You know he loves that. Coming up next, Chris Solomon. Chris Solomon's here from No Laying Up. He is the man that has made your viewing of golf and reading of golf, I guess, via Twitter, a lot more enjoyable over the last 3 years.
That's tough to live up to if that's the way you're going to introduce me.
Well, that's what you're getting. So here we go. Where are you right now? What city or town or crazy country are you in?
I'm in Athens at the moment, not Georgia. There's no Bulldog fans around. I'm looking up at the Acropolis at the moment, but I'm ready to talk some golf. I'm ready to talk Masters. It's Masters week in my mind. I'm not going to pay much attention to the Houston Open. I'm sorry, but I'm ready for the Masters.
I agree, and this is an international podcast. Let's be serious. And so that's really good that you're here because, we're just reaching just so many people all across the world. So here you go. There you get it, Greece, is what I'm saying. Okay, so basically I've compiled a list of what I would consider hot takes, I guess. Stuff that I've seen, you know, flying around the internet, headlines and conversation starters as we head into the Masters. As you said, I mean, it's pretty much Masters week. Let's make no bones about it. So my first hot take, and so basically I want you to agree or disagree and give me the reason why, okay?
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm absolutely ready.
You got the cannon ready?
The cannon's ready. I've had a couple Greek beers, but nice. I think that's gonna help the takes here. So
perfect.
Let's let it flow.
Here we go. First take. Jason Day's best is better than everybody else's best.
I think that's the thing that everyone wants to say when one of these guys wins come Monday morning. But you can't convince me that's way better than Rory's best. I don't think we've seen Rory's best in about a year. I think 3 months ago with what Spieth did at Kapalua, I don't think anybody else's A game runs out 30 under par at Kapalua. What we saw with Rory's A game at the Wells Fargo last year, running away, winning by 7, I don't think anybody else's A game necessarily beats that. So let's just all agree that all these guys have amazing A games, and chances are we're not going to all see that run into each other at the same time. I think Spieth's like B-plus game got him within 3 days A game at the PGA Championship last year. If you want to say that Day's A game is the best, that's okay, but I don't think there's any definitive evidence to support that. So if you got to pick a guy and you want to take Day, I'm fine with that, but there's nothing within those three. I'm even willing to throw Fowler when he's on the absolute top of his game. I think he's in the mix of that. He doesn't show it as consistently as the rest of the guys, but I'm not signing off on being totally able to say Day's A game is the best of any of them.
Well, I agree with you. And I mean, isn't every week somebody's A game wins? I mean, isn't it Bubba Watson's A game when he's clicking is just as good as Day's or Rory? I mean, you know, it seems, as you mentioned, I mean, it's fodder to talk about, but aren't these guys, when they win, aren't they like the best out there? I mean, they're beating all the guys that week.
Yeah, what's the point of establishing whose A game is the absolute best? Because like, I'm pretty sure like Tommy Armour shot 28 under par at a PGA Tour event once before, but he's not going to the Hall of Fame. As much as he is a Hall of Fame legend for off the course reasons, I don't think he's going to the Hall of Fame for what happened on the course. So it's kind of like, I don't know, it's this discussion that we insist on having. It's kind of like Justin Thomas got asked, how long did I make it before mentioning Justin Thomas, by the way? But anyways, he got asked a few months ago, would you rather win a major championship this year or be on a winning Ryder Cup team? And it's like, that's not a real hypothetical question.
Right.
Like, it's not something you actually have to choose between. So it's not like the point of golf is whose A game is the best. I mean, it's a lot more about consistency and how often you win. And if you want to make the case that Day has been the best player over the last year, if you don't put as much weight in major championships as most of us do, that's a very, very safe case to make. But it's not a real thing in golf. That's not like what we're out to determine. I mean, it's you stack up resume versus resume, in my opinion. So this whole hypothetical question of whose A game is best, That's why we play tournaments every week, is to see who is the best every week. If we wanted to just play one tournament a year, that would be, I guess, our conclusion on whose A game was the best for that year. But that's not the way golf is played.
I agree. There you go. First hot take done. Second one.
Uh-oh.
Rory McIlroy struggles or because he can't putt.
Oh, get out of here. That's terrible. No. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I don't know if you do. But what are his putting stats look like since he switched to the cross-handed grip?
Well, he's been – I mean, the thing is, it's his game that's inconsistent. I don't think it's necessarily a short game. But it seems that on any given day, Rory can go way up or way down. And I thought Bay Hill was a good representation of kind of his year. But – you know, the important thing is to remember that he's doing this and still finishing very high in tournaments. He's not got his best stuff, you know?
Well, I think the way we look at Spieth and the way we look at Rory, we want to find a weakness and we want to, dig at that, right? So this kind of somewhat false narrative has existed that Spieth's long game isn't very good and that he's carried by his short game, which is absolutely ridiculous because he's one of the top 10 best ball strikers in the game. At least he was last year. I don't know what his stats look like this year. I know this year has not been ideal for him. And the same goes for Rory. Rory is, at minimum, three best ball strikers in the game. He's not been one of the 50 best putters in the game. That's fine. But if you look at the way shot values are weighted, the top players in the game are the top ball strikers. The top putters in the game are not the guys you're going to find at the top of the money list, top of the world rankings. As important as putting is to round out a complete game, ball striking makes up about 70 to 72% of a player's game, if I'm quoting Mark Brody's stats right. I don't have that off the top of my head, but it's not Rory's putting that is driving his current struggles, and I would say struggles in quotes, because just because he hasn't won in a year doesn't mean he's necessarily struggled. He's been battling injury, and he's been very close at times, but it's actually been his ball striking on a round-to-round basis that has been kind of shaky so far this year. And he's hit the ball in really bad spots, going out of bounds, hitting the ball in the water, making a lot of big numbers. And it's not been terrible putting that's holding him back. It's not been like Graham DeLette, whose putter basically cost him the Valspar. Right. That's not what's going on with Rory at all. So,
okay. So that's that one's out.
Yeah, out.
Now you mentioned Jordan Spieth. So here's my question. Is Jordan Spieth playing well enough to win the Masters?
He's my pick to win the Masters. I'm sticking with it. So I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that because of his history at Augusta so far.
But you have to agree that this is not the Jordan Spieth that we saw last year, which is fine. The last couple of months, it has not been anything close to a dominant Jordan Spieth, right?
No, it's... I don't know if the word concerning is what I'd use, but it's not ideal going into it.
That can all change. I mean, you could be as hot as possible going into the Masters and finish outside the top 25. Would I like to see him playing better going into it? Of course I would. But again, around this time, two and a half months ago, I was looking at it thinking his 2016 could be even better than his 2015. Because it could quickly... every time I've tried to start to count the guy out, it's flipped on me very quickly. So I'm refusing to switch from my preseason pick of Spieth to win the Masters. I'm sticking with it, and he's going to win his back-to-back green jackets.
And speaking of people that have won multiple green jackets.
No,
it's not. It's not what you think. This is not what you think.
Okay.
It's better than that.
Okay.
Is Phil Mickelson ever going to win another major?
Okay. Is he 45 already?
45 turns 46 this year.
I'm going to say yes. I will say yes. Only because the likelihood of that being replayed back and rubbed in my face is less if I say yes than it will be no, and he wins the Masters next week.
Which is exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, he's at the last two Masters, I think, or let's see, no, I got that wrong. 2014 PGA, 2015 Masters, he finished runner-up, I think, at both of them, if I remember right. That's not that long ago. He's had a great start to this season. He hasn't won, I know, since 2013, but we're talking about a guy who won Open when no one ever, ever thought he would win an event like that. So do I think he has one more crazy Phil-like run left in the tank? Sure. I mean, I'd say he's got probably 20 more shots at it, let's say, before he turns 50. Do I think he has a 5% and he lines up, sure. So yeah, I'll say yes. Phil will win another major.
I agree. I would love. I think I was having a conversation with Jay Busby on his podcast about Jack Nicklaus in 86, and I said that the modern day Nicklaus in 86 would either be Phil doing something silly at a U.S. Open and winning on Sunday, or Tiger in about 5 years winning another Masters. That would probably be our generation's 86 Jack. But as you said, Phil's 45. I mean, he turns 46 this year, so it's obviously the same age as Jack in 86. It is now. Here's another hot take for you. Is Adam Scott single-handedly making the putter ban look overhyped?
Can I back up real quick, because I want to ask you this on Phil. We haven't seen an old guy win a major in a while, right? But would you say, like, with the equipment the way it is now, that the old guys have a better chance than, like, Jack is maybe not the best comparison because he's Jack Nicklaus, but, like, in somebody in that era, wouldn't you say the way Phil still hits the ball, keeps up with distance, that he has probably a better chance than guys may have had in their late 40s, maybe 20, even 10 years ago?
I've said for a while that I think Phil will compete. And when I say compete, I mean have a chance to possibly win the Masters up until he's 55 years old. And I agree with you that the all of this stuff has helped Phil the most, I think, of anybody. But I also think it's because Phil's always been a long hitter and has always been able to kind of keep it up. So, yes, I think so. I think we saw, you know, the Ernie win at the Open was, I mean, I think he was, what, 41? Was he 40, 41 when he won the Open?
Probably.
Yeah, and you think, you know, that seemed like a little bit of a surprise, but I think Ernie Els could win another major in a year or two. I mean, he still has the game. If he's feeling confident with a putter at some point, I feel like you could see him compete and get in the conversation. For Phil, when he's interested and locked in, I feel like he can compete at the Masters in particular probably for another 10 years or so.
Yeah,
so yeah, no, I agree with you. So Adam Scott in the long putter ban, is he single-handedly making it seem like a bigger deal that, or a smaller deal than we thought it was going to be?
Well, all right. So Adam Scott's putting right before he switched to the long putter hits two or three seasons back to back that were very, very poor by any measure. Right. Going before that though, and if you count all of his stats with the short putter versus the long putter, the difference like in his strokes gained putting is very negligible. I know his confidence, I guess, his overall results changed immediately when he went to the Broomstick. He won the Masters, obviously, in 2013 and rose to number one in the world rankings. But overall, if you're taking the large sample size, there's not a large difference. He's not like he was an elite putter with the Broomstick and was terrible with the short stick. So for me personally, I never thought it would affect Adam Scott that much. Did I see this career resurgence we're seeing in the current year? No, I did not. Did not predict that. But I always thought the putter ban would have a bigger effect on Webb Simpson, Keegan Bradley types. And Webb has been both of those guys have been pretty much ruled ineffective at this point. And Webb switched a year early, which I'd never understood that move. That makes absolutely no sense in my opinion, like to try to beat the curve. Or I don't even really know what the rationale is on behind making the switch early, but I mean, you don't even hear from those guys anymore. Right. So we're honing in on this Adam Scott thing that it was never that big of a deal to begin with. He was just the best player that used a long putter. So he became like the best example case for the case, either for or against this anchor ban. And I just don't think it mattered that much. He was not that great of a putter, even with the long putter. So I think it's a bit overblown. I think the anchor ban is kind of dumb. I don't like with the way the guys are hitting the ball 450 yards out at Austin Country Club this week. The fact that this was a priority item for the USGA, I will never understand. But I mean, it's where we currently are. But for Adam Scott, I think he's the exception to the rule. It looks like Billy Mayfair is still anchoring the putter. I don't understand this ban, but I don't expect to hear from Webb Simpson or Keegan Bradley or any of those guys anytime soon. But I'm not that surprised with what we're seeing from Adam Scott.
Okay, so you think really it's still a big deal to ban the putter. It's just Adam Scott's the one guy that's able to win changing. So now moving on to another guy that's in his 30s that's had a good year that you love, really. If we were being realistic, should Bubba Watson always be the favorite at every Masters?
No, I don't think so. If you look, he's won it twice, right? He won it in 2012, 2014. We know that. I don't have the results in front of me, but I don't think he has another top 10 there, does
He
he?
doesn't. He does not.
He does not. I think it's worked out very well for him in 2 different years, but he's not a guy that you can count on to perennially attend there. I don't, or contend there. I say that, and I'm very hesitant because it could come back and bite me because he may very well win the Masters this year, but I don't see him as. He's got a shaky putter. People don't like to talk about it. And the way that he kind of wipes at 5 foot putts, I don't understand how he won twice at Augusta. I really, really, really don't. I understand he is probably, when he's hitting the ball the best, he's probably a top two ball striker in the entire world. But I can't count on him to be there. I mean, if he's near the top, he's happened to want to win it twice. But you and I know that a lot of really random luck things can happen, especially at Augusta, especially at majors. Like just being at the top and having your only two chances at contending both end up in victories. That doesn't mean that I think that you should be the favorite year after year. I think Spieth's performance in the last 2 years alone has been better than, Bubba's entire, I guess, career. If you look at his entire career of performance, I think Spieth should have beat him in 2014. I think he made some really questionable club decisions, and it just worked out really, really well in Bubba's favor. If Bubba's ball goes OB on 13, like it probably should have, it's a completely different tournament. I'm digging my own grave right now because if Bubba wins this Masters, I'm gonna climb into a shell and not be heard from for months. But no, I don't think he should be the favorite. I think he should be maybe fourth or fifth favorite on the board, which is a pretty high favorite if we're talking about the game of golf as a whole. But no, I don't think he should be the top billing.
At the end of 2016, Ricky Fowler will have blank majors. What's your number?
Before the season, I said zero, so I'm staying with it. I think it goes
Oh,
Spieth,
come on,
DJ. Come
Oakmont.
on.
He's gonna love Oakmont.
I'm sure he will. I'm sticking with it, though. Spieth, DJ, Rory, and Koepka are my four major winners this year. I'm sticking
You're
with it.
such a homer. You're such a
I know I
homer.
am. Come
I
on. I
can't
had to
believe you
pick.
didn't put Patrick Reed in there at one of them. You debated that for hours.
I rode him pretty hard going into the Masters last year, and I'm a little gun shy on it. I had to throw in Thomas Reed or Koepka somewhere in there. Then Koepka made the most sense for the PGA. So.
Lydia Ko, her career so far has been better than Tiger Woods to start. True or false?
Technically, if we're looking at progress to this age point, absolutely. I think she's got, what, her 11th win. She's like not even 19 years old yet. Tiger, I don't think, won his 11th event till he was 23 or something like that. So if we're looking at it from that perspective, yes. However, the career of LPGA players, and I don't, again, have the numbers in front of me, but I want to say their careers don't seem to be as long or their periods of contention are not as consistent as the male players are. I could be very well proven wrong on that, but I don't know. We're talking. It's not. It's the same sport, but it's a completely different comparison, right?
Tough
I mean,
to compare for sure, and
it's tough.
you do see teenagers win more on the LPGA than you do PGA Tour. I think what she's doing deserves more talk, not just within golf fans but media. Just because, I mean, this is so insane that an 18-year-old has 11 professional golf wins.
I mean, I understand and I think you and I even talked about this lately on my podcast about the non-American players on the male tour not garnering as much attention as the American players. However, when I remember when Annika Sorenstam was doing her thing on the LPGA tour, it was a lot bigger deal. She's not an American, and the attention that she got was seemed to be a lot bigger than Lydia Ko. And I don't think people understand that she's 18. For me personally, it's hypocritical because I don't watch LPGA golf much, and so I'm as much to blame as anyone. But I'm surprised more people that aren't more diehard about golf than I am don't talk about what she's doing. I mean, she's going to like match her age and wins before she turns 20, isn't
Right.
she?
I mean, it's just insane. I mean, she's already won twice this year, and she's got a chance to do something this coming week. I just think that I wish there was a way to get a little bit more interest in that, because I think if a male was doing this, people would be losing their minds. If an 18-year-old man had 11, I guess 18-year-old boy had 11 PGA Tour wins and a major, you would be going, you've got to be kidding me. Next hot take. Should the United States players feel good about their performance at the match play, considering it's a Ryder Cup year, or feel bad about it? 11 of 16 in the final 16, none in the final four.
I'm going to say neither. That's just the reverse of a hot take, I guess you could say.
this is cold. It's as cold as it gets. That's right.
It's. I mean, there's 47 events or something like that on the PGA Tour, right? And there's 4 days of a tournament every week. This week there's 5 for the match play. Like the Rafael Cabrera Bello, I'm not even positive how to pronounce it, can beat Rory McIlroy on a stroke play round and no one would take notice.
Right.
If they happen to play each other in the match play, now if that happens, you know, what are we saying? Are we concerned about Rory in the Ryder Cup in September? No, like not a chance, right? I mean, these guys beat each other all the time. And when the match play was actual, you know, a fun event with single elimination, we had a 64 and a 62 seed in the finals once. And over the course of a season, obviously they differentiate themselves a lot, but on a day-to-day basis, the difference is not that great. We're not talking about like Tyronn Lue beating Steph Curry in one-on-one or something like that. That wouldn't happen in the NBA. But in golf, absolutely the number 200 guy can go out and be the number one player in the world. So I struggle to look at like March match play results and really equate that at all to the Ryder Cup. As much as I was excited to see the U.S. versus Europeans in the potential matches, I think they won 14.5 to 8.5 or something like that. If it was the opposite, I would be saying, who cares? It's March. It doesn't matter. And I stick with that. I mean, I think the Ryder Cup is kind of random and fluky as it is, and people put a lot of weight in what happens and react to it and build task forces and stuff. But it comes down to 3 days of match play in setting that you can't prepare for or you don't experience anywhere else outside of these 2 year and for a 2 year period. So no, I don't look at anything that happened in the match play and think much of it.
Tiger Woods may or may not, or possibly could have potentially played a practice round at Augusta National.
What?
Is Big Cat, this was the reports from people that I am fairly certain are not true. Will Big Cat be with Golf Club at Augusta next week?
No.
That's it. That's all you get. No, I'm with you. No.
No.
Moving on. It's Sunday morning, next Sunday. You get to pick the final three groups, the final group 7 under, the next twosome 6 under, the next twosome 5 under. Who are you going with?
Oh, my God. All right, Spieth is going to be in that 7 under group. I'm not going to put Thomas with him because I can't handle any more Spieth-Thomas friendship comments. I can't do it. I just can't. I really can't. I sound like a basic white girl with Starbucks right now. I cannot. All right, so Spieth and Rory, I'm going to put them in the final group. Day and Thomas for me personally at -6, and Koepka and Fowler at -5. I think that's the most intriguing top six you can make from my personal perspective. I don't think necessarily from an overall general public, I don't think people would agree with that, but that's what I would want to see. Who did I leave out? I left out
Phil Mickelson.
Oh, okay.
Come on. Phil's got to be in there somewhere. He's the craziest person ever. He's the best person to have in a final group at a major, and it's not even close.
If you're asking for like my Twitter material, then yeah, absolutely. Put Tiger and Phil in there at -7. But for what I'm rooting for, at the same time, like the PGA last year with Day and Spieth, I love Jason Day, and I'm obviously a big Spieth fan. Like, that was almost painful. I didn't know who to root for. Like, I wanted Spieth to win, but I liked Day, so I didn't want Day to blow the lead. But I don't know. It was kind of weird. I mean, it's a good problem to have as a golf fan, but it'd be hard to pick between those six as to what I'd be rooting for. I think you just kind of kick back and enjoy it.
A little different than Sean McKeel versus Chad Campbell. Okay, I have a couple of Twitter questions for you because your Twitter account is a lot of fun and everybody seems to enjoy it immensely, especially around the major time. How many tweets will you have prepared prior to the start of Masters Tournament Day, Thursday? How many will you have saved and prepared to send out over the next 4 days? So I'm talking about material you make prior.
Uh, in prior years, a decent amount. This year, I have zero at the moment, and I have a really rough schedule leading up to the Masters. But let me answer this question a different way by explaining what I went through to make sure that I'm in front of a TV come Masters Thursday. I have to actually go to the U.S. for several meetings, and I moved CEOs and CFOs' schedules around to have our meetings early in the week, to take a red-eye flight back on Wednesday to be back in Amsterdam by Thursday of the Masters. So if I don't have jokes and tweets prepared, lay off me for a little bit. I went to excruciating lengths to make sure that I'm home and in town and watching on TV the second the Masters tips off. So hopefully maybe that morning I will start to brainstorm some things, but half the fun of Twitter is just like kind of reacting to things that are going on at the time.
Absolutely.
You can't prepare too much for it.
I agree. I was wondering how many things you had in, you had in your holster ready to go. give me five Twitter followers or Twitter follows that you would suggest for people to go check out as we get ready for the first major of 2016.
I always hate doing this because there are a ton of people that I could name. And
that's
if
fine.
I
they can to, get tough. Skin. I know. If he doesn't name you on this, it's okay. He doesn't hate you. It's just how it goes.
I might hate you though.
Maybe he does hate you. That's okay.
Well, three that don't count. All right, and the five are obviously the other no laying up guys: Tron Carter, NLU, Big Randy, NLU, and NG Shu. You'll find those in the no laying up profile. You can easily find those. Those are three easy ones, but they don't count. I'm not going to name you as well because that doesn't. That's just. I feel like you're asking me to name you right now.
No, I'm really not. I'm really, really not.
Relax. I didn't think you were until you just responded like that.
No, I don't. I don't even want it. If you said it, I would have cut it out anyway.
Relax. I'm kidding. Kyle Porter, CBS, is probably my favorite golf Twitter follow. He makes me laugh daily. Adam_Sarson is the best for vines, gifs, reactions. I feel like he's really stepped his game up lately with the Twitter game and. He's always on top of things. If I'm naming a player who's probably not going to be live tweeting the Masters, he's going to be playing on it. Justin Thomas I'm biased because I'm obviously a huge fan of him, but I think he's the best like PGA Tour player on Twitter to follow. Can we come back to that at the very end? I'll name three more by the end. Do you have any more questions for me? Because I'm struggling
to
think
on
my
feet
right
now.
This was the last one.
That was it. And you're acting like I'm asking you like a pop quiz question. This is Twitter. You should have just said nobody. You should have said don't follow anybody, and don't tweet. That's it. That's what you pull from this.
All right, Chris Chaney, wrong fairway, maybe wrong underscore fairway. I'm not positive what the hell is he. He's hilarious. He's always on top of things. DJ Pihowski at DJ Pie from the PGA Tour. Again, fire tweeter, always on top of the gifts and ready to roll.
And Justin Ray, GC, is pretty good too.
He's got amazing stats to the point where like I hate when he tweets because his stats are always so good. Like I hate that I have to stop my Twitter feed every time and read it. And I'm like, wow, why didn't I think to blend all those stats together and come up with that? Yeah,
I do wish he would throw in fake ones though. I've told them this plenty of times. I wish that like one every 10 would be fake and you had to call him on it. You know, like some just completely out of this like left field. You know, Kevin Streelman cuts made in a row or something. Just people just be like looking at it and nod their head. And I just have always thought it'd be a great move from him to do that. Chris, we appreciate it. Obviously, follow him at no laying up, but you probably already follow him. I only got four though.
I forgot Brendan Porath. Brendan Porath is number five, and that's it. Those are my five to follow.
So there you go. That's five guys. Masters week, pretty much here. Let's be honest. I mean, we've got Houston, and it'll be fun. Jordan Spieth in the field, along with some other big names. I think Dustin Johnson's playing Henrik Stenson, but. We're all magnolias and pimento sandwiches at this point, and we're excited. And as you heard, your favorite Twitter follow is flying a cross-country flight and then back to Europe just to make it in time to entertain you guys. So you guys send him a thank you whenever you can. Chris, I appreciate you coming on.
Shane, I'm not a hero. I'm just here to serve.
Okay? I agree. I know. They don't all wear capes, buddy. They do not all wear capes. Anything else? You guys got a website? You're redoing your website or you're coming up with it?
Yeah, we're switching hosts right now, nolangup.com, but I don't know if we're going to have anything up before the Masters because of some technical issues. But you can find our podcast as well. It's on iTunes and on our website as well. And I think our last guest was a bit of a dud.
Yeah,
You might have heard of him,
bummer.
But
he was the worst. And we have a great bet coming. We have picked. You have Rory Spieth and who?
I thought. No, you have Day, don't you? I don't.
Yeah.
I have Scott. I have Adam Scott.
You have Adam Scott. I have Day, Bubba, and Louie. And the loser has to eat a Burger King hot dog.
Is the loser even a winner in that scenario? Or is the loser even a loser in that scenario?
I
'Cause I
mean,
feel like.
I'm not excited about eating a Burger King hot dog. So I will be. I will be bummed on Monday when I
Okay.
drive over to Burger King and order, and I will Vine it or Periscope it or something. I don't know. People don't want to watch anybody eat anything, but I will at least take a picture of it and put that
There needs to
online.
be evidence. There needs to
Yeah,
be evidence.
before
You've
and
already given
after.
up. You've already given up.
Well, I just
That
I,
started
I'm
yet.
listen. You just have to be realistic here. I think your team on paper is better than my team, but we'll see. It'll be fun.
Thanks, Shane. Appreciate it, buddy.
Well, that's it. That was fun. Episode two done. Many thanks to Chris at No Laying Up. Make sure you give them a follow if you don't already, because they are very entertaining all the time, but especially around the majors. So I'm sure they'll have a lot of fun stuff in store for you guys next week. Follow us at the Clubhouse Pod. You can send in anything with a hashtag ClubhouseSB. You can send the emails if you want to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon at gmail.com. Of course, I'm Shane Bacon, and this was fun. It's going to continue to improve and get better and all that good stuff. So make sure you listen, subscribe if you haven't, write a review if you would, if you do that. If you write a review, Chris Solomon will send you $40. That's a promise. I can guarantee it. He already told me to do it. I know he didn't say it himself, but I can vouch for him. He's good for it.